You are tuned to Free Radio. All right, kids, it is now my job to teach you the theory of evolution.
Oh, boy!
Now, I, for one, think that evolution is a bunch of bull crap, but I've been told I have to teach it anyway. It was thought up by Charles Darwin, and it goes something like this. In the beginning, we were all fish, okay, swimming around in the water. And then one day, a couple of fish had a retard baby, and the retard baby was different, so it got to live. So retard fish goes on to make more retard babies, and then one day a retard baby fish crawled out of the ocean with its mutant fish hands, and it had butt sex with a squirrel or something and made this, retard frog squirrel. And then that had a retard baby, which was a monkey fish frog, And then this monkey fish frog had butt sex with that monkey, and that monkey had a mutant retard baby that screwed another monkey, and that made you. So there you go. You're the retarded offspring of five monkeys having butt sex with a fish squirrel. Congratulations.
You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, perhaps, 101.3 FM. If you're not catching this as an archive or possibly on freakradio.org as a stream. I'm Robert Norris. Coming up next, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the Thursday evening show, August 23rd, 2014. I'm going to do some kind of live interviews. I'm recording it beforehand since we don't yet have a studio, but the good news is we may soon have one. Tip of the hat to one of the programmers, who I will call Mr. M, who may have found us a possible location, in which case live phone calls will be coming back. You'll be able to reach us while we're on the air. And who knows, maybe we'll be able to survive as a somewhat viable station for a bit more into the future. Let's hope. If you want more information or you want to help out with this, you can go to the Free Radio website at freakradio.org if you're not already there and get more information. Or you can give me a call at 423-4833, area code 831, again 831, 423-4833, and I will try to hook you up, particularly if you're interested in perhaps becoming a broadcaster, contributing comments about some of the shows, particularly my show, or you have information regarding homeless situations or local situations in Santa Cruz that aren't being covered by the media that involve issues of social justice for folks generally in the community.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin the show with kind of a follow-up on what we began on Sunday when I did an earlier show. The email I got from Ronnie Marino, the Feather Lady, and I read it to you, and you may remember, according to her email, she's disabled, 80 years old, and is having serious eviction problems, lives in a two-bedroom, and then suddenly she's being told that she has to get out. We're going to call her up and talk to her about it. She's apparently decided she's going to weather the storm, is what I've heard from her. There's a new rent of $900 up from $600. There's a rent increase of $621 to a new rent of $900, which really sounds pretty outrageous to me. It's a Section 8 situation. So it's, we'll be hearing more about the details of this from her and also her response and how she's trying to deal with it by contacting appropriate agencies. So if you're a Section 8 person or know Section 8 people, although this is just one person's experience, and I'm no expert on Section 8 for sure, although a couple people do come to the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meetings, one guy regularly, that I throw every Wednesday, or that Huffsters throw every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 11. Actually, it's every other Wednesday, but some of those folks also show up at the Conscience and Action meetings, and the Conscience and Action meetings sometimes involve some of the same issues. So if you're interested in these issues, you can come any Wednesday at 11, and you're likely to get at least an earful of what's going on, and these meetings are open at the Sub Rosa Cafe. So anyway, I'm going to give her a call now because she'd invited me to do so, and we'll see what her latest situation is. This is Ronnie Marino, the Feather Lady, as she calls herself. She used to sell feather art on Pacific Avenue before driven away by the new downtown ordinances. Not so new anymore.
Hello?
Hello, Feather Lady.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
I'm good. Let me turn down the volume a little so we don't drown out our audience here.
Okay, wonderful. I have a very loud voice.
Oh, you're good. It's just my telephone is questionable. So, Ronnie, I've kind of given you a little bit of an introduction before I called, and we're on the air now. I should say we're on the... You're going to be recorded for playment in about 3 or 4 hours when we start at 6. So be aware that anything you say will be held against you.
Definitely.
So I've mentioned that, you know, you're in a rental situation which has gotten pretty extreme for you, although for others in Santa Cruz, apparently, you know, people are getting a beating right and left. At least that's what I hear from the Rent Control Forum on Monday that I went to. First of all, you're a person who... talk about yourself a little bit. What?
Well, I've been in Santa Cruz. I guess it's almost 50 years. I was thinking at that. I've worked in Santa Cruz. I went to school here in Santa Cruz. I rented regular rent, mostly an apartment. I mean, in the early days, I rented different houses up in the Santa Cruz Mountains. So I've always been an artist. That's part of my life. I do feather work. And about
it shows where the power structure is. That's already been talked about a lot on mainstream media. And I'm going to be talking about it more on my show. I do a show on, as you probably know, from 6 to 8 tonight.
Free was an archive or possibly...
A tricep muscle. So I had surgery on that December 4th of 17 and had pretty much been recovering from this with my first encounter of our new property manager. Well, I've been in Santa Cruz. I guess it's almost 50 years. I was thinking at that. I've worked in Santa Cruz. I went to school here in Santa Cruz. I rented regular rent, mostly an apartment. I mean, in the early days, I rented different houses up in the Santa Cruz Mountains. So I've always been an artist. That's part of my life. I do feather work. And about maybe 20 years ago, I had gotten on the Section 8 program through HUD for, well, it's all lower-income people. Because even back then in the early 80s, I started to see kind of a shift between affordable apartments. I was always able to afford to pay rent.
Now, before we get into that, and that really is kind of one of the key issues we're talking about, I want to go back to where we first met and what you were doing and why you're not doing it anymore, which is essentially displaying art, being a part of the cultural scene downtown on Pacific Avenue.
Well, because I'm not allowed to. I mean, they really limited. It started out, it was fine, and then they started limiting that you can't sell anything that you can wear on your body. That was one of the new rules. And so a lot of my work revolves around smaller items like headpieces, hamperettes, earrings. Those are my bread and breakfast. So they limited me to being able to sell medicine shields because I do a lot of feather work, and a lot of it is around the Native American spirituality. So I make medicine shields and design pouches, medicine pouches and wine. Those I can sell, and I'm grateful for that, but they're also a much higher-end item, so they sell far and few between. So
I haven't seen you down there much.
Well, that's why. And plus, in December, or I guess it's just a year now, I had fell downtown in the roasting company and wound up having a torn rotator cuff and a ruptured bicep muscle. So I had surgery on that December 4th of 17 and had pretty much been recovering from this with my first encounter of our new property manager. What was the beginning of January? And like I don't know if I said, but I've lived in this apartment for 21 years. It's a small complex. It's an 8-union complex. And it has a shed, not a shed, an overhang where we can park our cars. And in front of that, there's probably about 6 or 7 feet before you hit the wall. So I would keep my tables down there since I live on the second floor. And I do a lot of artwork and little ladders and stuff like that. But
now, where is this place, Ronnie? Where is this place?
It's on Dakota Avenue, right in back of the doctor's offices, about 3 houses in. It's on the left-hand side.
So it's within the city limits of Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah, definitely within the city limits of Santa Cruz. And so we had our things, other neighbors, there's other neighbors down there, parked very neatly behind there, and this woman comes in, gives us 10-day notice that we have to move all that. All that has to be moved within 10 days, and she was really nasty about it. So I won't go into the whole story of what happened with her, but it was not nice. Well, about a couple of weeks, the beginning of June of this year, we got a 2-day notice that they were painting the exterior of our building. It was going to be a 10-day thing. Make a long story short, I knew then the red light went off. Something's going on here. You know, they're painting the outside of the building, covering up all the termite damage with new paint and boards. So a couple of weeks after that, this went on for 6 weeks. It was not a 10-day thing. It was very evasive. And a little bit in between that, I had called the landlady and asked her, how long is this going to last? And sometimes my tone isn't great when I'm frustrated. I'm 80 years old. I'm allowed to be cranky once in a while.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. Anyway, I'm coming down the stairs for a doctor appointment maybe 3 weeks ago. I live upstairs now. I have a cane. I use a cane these days. And the steps are covered with paint tarps, paper, the railings covered with paper. And I'm coming down the stairs, and I'm not real happy because I'm going to fall. This woman is standing in the middle of our parking lot, screaming at me at the top of her lungs, what are you complaining about now? And I looked at her, I said, instead of helping me, why are you screaming at me?
And what is her position exactly?
She's the property manager.
And she lives
the
on the property.
Manager.
She lives on the property?
No. She doesn't live on the property. She's also the girlfriend of the landlord's son.
I see.
And she pretty much attacked me verbally while I was down there. She was screaming in my face, and, you know, I come from the South Bronx. I can have a temper. But I held myself, you know, and I said, I don't deserve to be treated like this, and you being so disrespectful to me. And I said, this isn't very nice behavior for a property manager. And I walked away. As I walked away, she turns around towards me, and she says, keep talking. And she has her fist clutched like she's going to push me.
Huh.
I said, you're not coming for me, are you? And she stopped. Anyway, 4 days later, on my door, I got pinned a notice that I will get a $621 increase in rent starting in November.
Now, is this also matched with other tenants who have gotten similar notices?
No, the lady underneath me got one, and she's also on Section 8. We're the only ones that are on Section 8 in this building, by the way. So I really feel they're discriminating against us.
Are they also, how do the rents for other folks in the building compare?
Well, it's always been fair. I mean, that's why I thought this was never going to happen to me, and that I was going to wind up being homeless because of it. Because the landlady before this manager has always been fair. I've been here 21 years. I don't know if you know Nick, because he was here a long time ago, and he was a WW2 veteran, and he lived here, and after the earthquake, he got this apartment, because he lived at the managed at St. George, so he got me this apartment. I had a one-bedroom voucher. She was very willing to take my two-bedroom voucher, and in fact, she didn't even charge me like a deposit.
So, has the property changed hands since then?
No. It's still the same landlady. She owns lots of properties around Santa Cruz. But I kind of, you know, it's like dollar signs in their eyes all of a sudden.
Do you want to say who she is, or are you reluctant to?
I don't need to say who she is. That doesn't matter. She owns a lot of property around Santa Cruz. She's always been fair that 21 years. She's raised my rent maybe 4 times in 20 years.
Except recently, though.
Except with this incident of this new manager who's a total bully, and nobody is going to bully me.
Now, have you had any conversations with other tenants regarding some kind of joint action, if you wish to say?
Well, one of the ladies down in number one, she pays regular rent from San Jose. She has a two-bedroom, she's paying, doesn't have any assistance. And then we had a new guy that moved in a couple of months ago. They threw the college girls out of here, by the way, that was living down in that apartment for about 4 or 5 years. They got rid of them, and I told them, I said, you don't have to move. You know, tenants do have rights.
Sort of.
And they moved anyway. So she had got this high-tech guy in there. He's paying $2,300 for his two bedrooms, same as mine. And another apartment that came available was a one-bedroom where the couple went back to Hawaii because it was cheaper in Hawaii. So he's paying $1,800.
I guess what I'm asking is,
are
any of them interested in, do they have concerns about how they're being, or are you the only one who's getting?
I'm not the only one. There's Donna, who came to me when I went to the meeting on the affordable housing crisis that they had in Santa Cruz a few weeks ago. She's my neighbor in number one. She had written a letter. She gave it to me. She's also written a letter for me and typed it up about the incident with this property.
Let me remind you, though, you know, this is a radio broadcast, so anything you don't want the...
There's nothing I don't want.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it, because I appreciate that. Have any of these folks been interested in getting together with you to engage in some joint action?
Well, we kind of talked about it. I have an appointment on September 18th with the Senior Citizens Legal Services, Amala Power. Do you know her?
I do not.
Well, anyway, she's the lawyer for this agency. I have an appointment to talk about this. Donna had typed up a letter, and she typed it to the landlady. You know, she typed it about our complaints, including her and another other person here. And I can read the list, but I called her, and I said, you know what? I said, you're giving it to the wrong person. You know, I said, it's not going to make a difference, like, to the landlady, because she knows exactly what's going on.
Right.
You know, so that's where we're at right now. I have it all written up, all this stuff about the 10-day notice, about our painting the building and it turning into 6 weeks, and just the whole thing.
Now, has the passage of rent control back in February, at least as a temporary measure, until... Hopefully, Measure M passes.
Right.
You know, in November, has that emboldened any of the tenants, or have the landlords in any way responded to that? Because it's
raising their rents.
They've raised the rents.
Not yet. I mean, she raised mine, and she raised Siwa.
Now, is she doing so in violation of the ordinance?
I don't know yet. That's what I'm trying to find out.
I see.
I did talk at that meeting. I made it my my business to go to that meeting, and I actually got up and talked and told about my situation and stuff. And Ryan Cooney, he came down after I finished my talk and gave me his
He's the supervisor. Go ahead.
You know, yes. And Sandy Brown, who's on the council, came down and gave me her card. So I've been dealing with their people, you know, in the last couple of weeks since the notice happened, everything. And they're trying to find out, since I'm on Section 8, am I included in that block?
That's an important question, not just for you, but for others as well.
Housing. They put me in touch with Mark at Housing.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to Mark at Housing. He gets back to me and goes, well, Ms. Marino, you only awarded a one-bedroom apartment and her raising the rent that much and being $2,200 a month is not out of line. So I asked him what his responsibility of this. I said, you passed my apartment. You're the ones that have approved the two-bedroom. I wasn't hiding my bedroom. It was there. And you passed it for 21 years. It was okay.
So in essence, you had a one-bedroom voucher. But
a two-bedroom apartment.
But you got a two-bedroom apartment. And they're saying, well, you got a good deal. Why are you complaining?
Yeah, like it's my fault all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. I said, you are the ones that approved this apartment. If you would have said something to me a long time ago, Rosalinda, this might happen or whatever, I might have put my name on different lists in Santa Cruz. Affordable housing.
And so in spite of this, though, you've decided you're going to ante up to this rent raise, which is, I guess, but for you it's a total, it's about, what, half or actually a third of the rent that they're charging?
Well, they're not a third of the rent. They charge a third of your monthly income.
Gotcha.
That's what how Section 8 program works.
And
so this will be a third of my income. And also, I would have to pay on top of the third of my income, that $621 increase, which brings it over $900, which isn't terrible for Santa Cruz, but it's terrible for me.
So this is essentially what it's. You were previously paying how much?
I was previously paying $300 a month.
So this is tripling your amount you were paying.
Yeah, and I do have other expenses, of course.
Well, you probably intend not to eat for the next few months, right?
No, I haven't cut that one out yet.
I see.
But you know, the thing is, I don't know if anything's going to happen with this, or I'm eventually going to have to move. I'll tell you one thing. I'm not moving in November 1st. I am not moving if I don't have somewhere to move to. I'll have to some way, you know, make up that. And I'm also seeing my legal rights, if anyone knows. What the issue, I do have another bedroom. There's lots of people that are in need of housing. I don't mind doing that at all. I don't know if my property manager will approve it. And as a disabled person, which I am a disabled person, do I have the right to rent that bedroom out without her permission?
Good question. I have no answer.
That's my first option.
Uh-huh. You're going to be finding out that from... has that been changed?
These council people, I've been in touch with them. They've been very nice. You know, and so far they've been very nice. Sandy Brown's working on that with the Attorney General people about if the law applies to me.
Have you contacted, you know, actual tenant organizations like the Santa Cruz Tenants Organization?
I'm in the process of doing that. You gave me Cynthia's number.
Right.
Right, so she's on my list for today or tomorrow morning. And I've called HUD, I've talked to you, I've talked to every one of the council people more than once. I've talked to legal aid. Maybe I was naive in trusting my landlady. You know, up of the peace and love generation, and I thought she cared about seniors and college students.
It's the bottom line, kiddo.
And it was my mistake of being trusting. You know, but she never showed me any reason not to. Like I said, she was always okay. We had a decent relationship for 20 years, no problem.
Have you tried contacting her directly?
Going forward and doing what I can, and I want people to be aware that this stuff is going on.
Have you tried contacting her directly?
Contacting who directly?
Your landlady.
She knows what's going on. This is all the setup. I don't see any reason to talk to her when she's okay with it. It's not like she lives out of Santa Cruz and she doesn't know what's going on. She knows what's going on.
I mean, did you have a personal relationship with her before, in any way?
I had a personal relationship. All of a sudden, she, as they said, I was complaining. I wasn't complaining. I was asking when the painters and construction people would be done. Because we had a 10-day notice, and they pulled a lot of stuff. You know, like keeping that stuff all over the staircase and all of that when a handicapped. Well, people live upstairs.
Yeah, gotcha. Well,
anybody could have fell. So anyway, that's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to call Cynthia. I'm definitely calling the disability people to find out what my rights are as a disabled person. And call my social worker. Is on vacation right now, but she and I also called the elder abuse people, and they took information down so it's documented against the property manager and the manager.
Mm-hmm. But when are you going to get back on Pacific Avenue and start selling those feathers again? Is my question.
I am going to start selling these feathers. If anybody wants to see me, I will be doing the Santa Cruz Antique Show on the second Sunday of the month, which is September 9th. I'm right outside the Total Fitness, and I will have my wonderful feather work.
Fair enough. Well, I think we've covered a lot of it. Anything that you want to say in addition?
No, not anything. I mean, I can go on with all little piddly things, but you guys get the gist of it. And I'm just working at to see if something else will open up to me.
Well, I'm curious.
If I do the footwork and shout loud enough, it'll happen.
I agree. You know, I'd be curious to know if Sandy Brown, and particularly Ryan Coonerty, who I have very little respect for, but if he helps you, that's good news.
Well, we'll see. I haven't talked to Ryan. I've been talking to his person. I guess I'll call it a right-hand man because I haven't talked to Ryan at all. I've been talking to, I think her name is, I have everything written down here. Allison.
Well, let me know how these things.
On behalf of Ryan.
Let me know how these things work out because
I certainly will.
I mean, I'd be surprised, but
as soon as I can, making that money.
I want to be surprised. So,
okay.
And again, we've been talking with, sign in as you want to be known as.
Ronnie Marino. Most people know me in Santa Cruz as Ronnie Marino, also known as the Feather Lady.
All right. Well, thank you, Ronnie.
Okay, Robin. Thank you so much.
All right. May see you at the antique fair, though I never go, so we'll see.
Well, stop by. I'm there.
Thank you, babe.
Okay. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye. And that was, of course, Feather Lady. I don't think I've ever gotten feathers from her, but she was at, she and other merchants, street merchants, were being driven off the street by the downtown ordinances. That concerned me. And that was around the time Alex and Joff, Alex Skelton and Joff Jones, who were doing paintings on the street, were being ticketed for hundreds of dollars by roaming cops. And that essentially drove them off the street in Santa Cruz, it seems like to me, although I haven't had any conversation with them recently.
Welcome back. We are joined now by a woman who scares the living shit out of me, former White House aide, reality TV villain, and author of the new book Unhinged, Omarosa Manigault Newman. Omarosa, what a pleasure it is to have you here.
I'm just not buying that.
Well, you got me there. You have been on a media blitz promoting your book and dropping secret recordings that you made during your time in the White House.
This is just the beginning of the type of corruption that's going on in Trump world, and I am here to blow.
Excuse me. I'll do the blowing around here. Now, you've brought with you today a new recording. This is an exclusive, so let's go ahead and have a listen. We warn you that what you're about to hear is extremely stupid.
Hey, lowlife. It it's me. Listen, I had no idea they were going to fire you after I told them to. I'm absolutely sick about it. Don't love it at all, but what I really wouldn't love is you flapping your yap all over town about all the crazy shit I say and do. So listen, I'd like to offer you $15,000 a month to shut the hell up and occasionally pick up my dry cleaning. Cool? Thanks, dog.
Okay. What the hell was that?
I saw this as an attempt to buy my silence, to censor me, and to pay me off $15,000 per month.
You say that there are more tapes, even video. You also allege that there is recorded evidence of the president using horrific racial slurs.
Absolutely.
How do you respond, Omarosa, to the questions about your own credibility?
I have been able to verify every single thing that I put in the book, and every single time the Trump people challenge me, I bring the receipts.
We've never paid attention to a word you've said. All that pompous highfalutin gobbledygook. Thought when you got fired your career was dead. Now you're peddling a goddamn book.
A brand new book, and guess who's really shook?
He says that you're a fraud, which is ironic cause he made ya. You say that they hushed you with donations that they paid ya. I think that we may have hit an all-time low. Now our precious country's a reality show. Though you're just a thirsty-ass publicity whore, could you be the hero we've been waiting for?
I am not going anywhere. Donald Trump has met his match.
Marosa, you're the worst, but damn, I'm glad you came. Will your sour grapes and secret tapes finally kick his ass at his own game?
It's the art of the deal.
Marosa, you're a mess, but I'm not mad you're here. If you crush this clown, I'll clean your frown when they make you Woman of the Year.
Marosa, we know that you're ratchet and mean, but we're ready to make you our queen.
Yes, queen, and when we say,
fine,
we'll buy your book today. We only hope that you'll play your tapes, Omarosa, Omarosa. Press play.
If I need to, I'll do what I have to do to protect myself.
Oh, Marosa, God, you suck, but go and make that coin.
Make that money, honey.
Open up a secret club for your fans, and maybe I will join. I said maybe, oh. My God, I hate you, Omarosa Manigault.
You're a monster.
But your ass I'll kiss, cause now he's pissing his pants and saying, oi, go vault.
He isn't Jewish, but okay.
Though you might be a fraud, every night till I pray to the Lord. That if you heard him saying the N-word, you taped it and that you'll play the tape. Omarosa, Omarosa, that's O-M-A-R-O-S-A.
Believe me, my tapes are much better than theirs.
Omarosa.
Donald Trump has met his match. I am not going anywhere. This is just the beginning.
Brandy Rainbow is a total loser. Believe me.
And that was Omarosa, the latest from Randy Rainbow, which I've been waiting for a while. He's popular with some of the listeners of this show, and I enjoy his stuff in spite of his obsessive entanglement with the Russiagate mythology. He also has working on that song John DiDomenico. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Domenico, perhaps. He's a Donald Trump imitator, and maybe I'll be playing some of his stuff later in the show. I mean, for me, Trump is an easy target. Impeach Trump, you get Pence, of course, and you get Trumpism whether you got Pence or Clinton or any of the two main parties, celebrities, because they're all backed by commercial interests, corporate interests that are, well, in Randy Rainbow's words, they suck, and they are not the people's interests. So most of the opposition to Trump is based upon, seems to be emanating from or led by Democratic Party hacks, and that doesn't really assist in ending Trumpism, because Trump got elected and beat out the whole Republican establishment because not only is he a clever showman and demagogue, but because he appeals to those who want to see real change in this country, and they will tend to desperately take it wherever they can, even if it's rude, crude, and mean. In fact, if it is rude, crude, it looks like it's a matter of having much more candor than the usual sophisticated politicians who will mouth all these brotherhood and love slogans, and they'll end up selling you down the river to the military like they've been doing for the last 40 years. And unfortunately, that's also true locally. But actually, to get back to that, and that's kind of coming up because there's an election on the horizon coming up in November for the city council and presumably some other things as well. Hopefully rent control will pass, as I mentioned before, and the end of the Costa-Hawkins law that allows exorbitant rent increases if somebody leaves an apartment, so-called vacancy decontrol. There are people running for office who are saying some good things, and I want to acknowledge that, but my skepticism is always there with the politicians who show up to seek votes and seek to be seen in a positive way, or even to see themselves in a positive way, but who actually haven't done much around these issues that suddenly they're championing, or at least talking about championing. And I'm talking about homeless civil rights issues, because those are the ones I've been concerned with for most of the time I've been here. So, for example, I went to a rally, a candidate rally for Drew Glover, who's doing his second run for the city council. And I'm still kind of thinking about this whole thing. I haven't reached final conclusions, although I tend to fall back on my knee-jerk skepticism. Drew's done a number of sort of large community events where people get together. Different organizations are provided with booths and opportunity to speak out, sort of the peace and love, environmental protection sort of mantra, and also local justice. But real kind of harder issues like police abuse, although Drew did speak about this one earlier in his career here, but real problems around particular kinds of racial profiling and so forth don't get his attention in ways that I notice. Maybe I'm just in the wrong place at the wrong time. In any case, my most recent concern, or one of the ones that we've been talking about on this radio station, this program, has been the issue of the bathroom bullshit we're getting from the Loudoun Nelson Center and from city authorities generally closing down bathrooms at different places in the city. City Hall, San Lorenzo Park for a year, now they've reopened them. And I understand I've been told they've retrieved the sink in the San Lorenzo men's bathroom. If so, congratulations. I'm going to try to get a hold of Brent Adams to see if he has any news on that. He's a guy who seems often really up to date on these things, more so than I am, even, if you can imagine that. But last Sunday, there was a Loudoun Park, or Laurel Park, next to Loudoun Nelson Center, shindig for Drew Glover, kind of a campaign kickoff. And so I showed up with my right to pee sign and leaned it against his table, and he didn't object, or at least his campaign workers didn't object. Indeed, people there seemed relatively eager to sign, or at least willing to sign, a petition demanding that the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms closed since March to the general community, but particularly targeting homeless people, be reopened. Also impacts, of course, seniors who go to the senior meal or the lunch there. And there was some pretty quick response to the petition there. And then, as well, the next day at the Rent Control Forum that was held on Monday, because it was the People's Democratic Club that ran the forum in the Resource Center for Nonviolence on Ocean Street. And must have picked up probably more than 50 signatures there, which for me is it's kind of impressive. I mean, I was doing it with some help from activist Phil Posner. Thank you, Phil. He's a Conscience in Action, as well as HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. Both I've been demanding and protesting around this issue. More recently, we did some protests in June, and hopefully we'll do some more, because I don't see simple petitions as having much of an impact. Though we are inviting people to come to the next upcoming shitty council meeting, as I like to defame our dear city council, that's on Tuesday. And I guess the rally is at noon, although the actual oral communications period when people are allowed to talk on items not on the city agenda is at 5:30. And actually, that phone call you just heard coming in, which I paused this broadcast to answer, was from a guy called Robert DeFreitas, who's usually on the other side of a lot of these issues around civil rights for homeless people, fencing. I don't know about his issue on his position on the fencing of the Loudoun Nelson Park, but I generally get the impression he's very conservative on these issues in terms of homeless civil rights. And he and I had a conversation after the rent control forum, which was on Monday at the resource center, that involved bathrooms. And he said, because he had written a letter to the Sentinel, which you can read if you go online, if you can get there. Sentinel has some strange policies regarding access to its online website. But he claimed that anybody who wanted to use the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms could just do it by walking in and asking for the code, as he had done. And I said, that's not been my experience. I don't think that's true, because I went there with a group of people and we were not allowed to use the bathrooms. But he insisted that was the case. And I said, okay, well, call me, and if you find it's true, if you're willing to go in there and say, I'm not here with an event, I'd like to use the bathroom. And apparently he called today, just a moment ago, and said that he had asked to use the bathroom, although he was there with a Tai Chi class, and he was candid about that to his credit. But he didn't know the people behind the counter. He didn't think they knew he was with the Tai Chi class. He was able to use it. He said they just gave him the code. I said I'd check it out to see if that seems either the policy has changed or whether simply something else is operational. He suggested maybe it was just more flexibility in a policy based upon a case-by-case assessment of people, which in a certain sense is okay if somebody comes in drunk and staggering and, I don't know, fuck up this bathroom, man, you know, then you might want to say, well, I don't want to give you the key to the bathroom. Go, you know, go somewhere else. But generally, the danger of allowing people on the basis of sort of their class feelings or their nervousness with homeless people to make those kinds of choices is injurious to poor people, and also isn't fair and isn't really an accurate assessment of the people who are coming up. In any case, I'm going to try to follow up on that. In fact, I think I may do so soon, very soon, because I'm surprised that Robert called me back. He and I, though we've been civil to each other over the years, have never been big buddies, and the fact that he's willing to back up his word is important to me, and I'm glad that it happened. But on the subject of bathrooms, here's Drew Glover at his rally talking about these issues. And again, I'm going to invite Drew to be on the air. I'll probably interview him next time I see him if he's up for it. He's often a very busy man, often too busy to involve himself in any of the civil rights activities I've been doing over the last 2 years, for instance. But he has invited me to come to some of his forums. He's involved with the Poor People's Campaign. He's been involved with different other groups of and I think he's been on the board of directors of a couple of other things. I don't want to confuse him with Steve Plaich, who's a sort of a board of director addict, it seems. In any case, let's hear what he has to say at this Sunday rally, which, by the way, is online on YouTube. You can go to it there. If you go to, if you browse for YouTube, John Doe 14K, those three kind of constellations of words, YouTube, John, and then Doe, D-O-E, 14K as one constellation of words. Anyway, this is under World Humanitarian Day Potluck Picnic and Drew Glover for City Council Kickoff Party. I'm only going to play a short segment of it concerning this bathroom issue and perhaps a few other things that I find of interest.
Are we looking for the easiest and most expensive way to solve our problems? Or are we going to really dig down into the problem, figure out solutions through trial and error, and then come out the other side with something that works not only for the environment, for our budget, and ideally for the citizens who live here in Santa Cruz? Boom. So let's get back to the park. So we're here, and as I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the program, there are no bathrooms available. If we have enough money to put fences up and give city management raises, why don't we have enough money to provide 24-hour bathrooms to our community living outside over our house? Hey. So right now on a Sunday, in a publicly funded park, there are no bathrooms. None available to anybody that wants to come in. I wrote none, zip, nada, zero bathrooms on a Sunday. So just to emphasize the point, there are no bathrooms. The closest one, if you're lucky, you could use the taqueria. If you're able-bodied, you could walk down to Saturn Cafe. But beyond that, I don't know where there's another bathroom around here. The Bagel Ring is over there, too, for anyone that needs the bathroom. So when the center is open, though, they've implemented a only certain people can use the bathroom policy, which is strange to have a publicly funded community center not allow people to use the bathroom. And so this is indicative of a much larger problem. But I agree that I think we all can agree that Santa Cruz is in the midst of a mental health and addiction crisis. And this place houses the teen center. So it's really important that we're able to provide safe and secure spaces for people to be able to learn and grow. But that doesn't mean that we can do that while leaving the people outside out of our minds and not thinking about their needs as well. If we're going to restrict indoor bathroom use, the city must offer alternatives. Advocates have spoken out about the need for more porta-potties in downtown because it's a humanitarian issue. But it's also a public safety issue. There have been stories published by the Sentinel about people coming to the center here, being turned away from using the bathroom, and then having to turn around and go to the bathroom on the lawn. There was another story that came out last week where someone was denied the use of the bathroom, so they tried to make it home. They got in their car and it defecated in their car because they couldn't get home fast enough to go and use the bathroom. That's unacceptable. Not to mention, if people don't have access to bathrooms, it's not like people aren't going to go to the bathroom. They're going to go in the bushes, on the sidewalk, in places where other people are going to have to interact with it. We need to have things in a much higher priority of taking care of people that are underserved in our communities. We need to talk about human needs, and we need to talk about how our policies make people feel dehumanized. There are portable shower options, meal programs, storage programs that are already operating that haven't gotten support from the city. There are so many possible ways that we can humanize people, but instead we choose fences and restrictions and barbed wire tent camps. We have a problem with our priorities. The path we are on is not sustainable. Dr. King asked the question, where to now, chaos or community? We're at a turning point in Santa Cruz. We have the opportunity to recalibrate our values and begin to prioritize people over the almighty dollar. You know what I think is kind of funny? Is that I met with the city manager, right, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago or something like that, and on his wall there's a big whiteboard with all kinds of words and numbers and money values on it, and in the header it says Quality of Life Projects. And the whole time I was sitting there talking to him, the projects are like the parking garage or the wharf rebuild, where there's like $60 to $100 million that are just like trying to be planned into these projects. But I'm thinking to myself the whole time I'm talking to him, it's quality of life for who? Right? Like, are we working to take care of the people that are in Santa Cruz now that need our support? Or are we trying to build infrastructure that's going to invite people from other places to come to Santa Cruz and exacerbate our problems for people that have lived here in Santa Cruz?
And then also, the term quality of life is usually, I've heard it frequently used to categorize anti-homeless measures in urban areas involving things like spiky reforming of seating areas where, like bus stops, so that homeless people aren't, or weary people, aren't tempted to lie down. quality of life has to do with not letting people sit down next to a building, on the, not letting them peacefully ask for spare change, getting rid of street communities and culture, getting rid of RVs because they look too downscale. This is the phrase, what the phrase quality of life often means when you look at it as I've seen it. Maybe it's just a kind of a dog whistle for me in a certain sense, and or at least a warning sign for me that, that something is wrong, and maybe it has some other meanings, but that's been my experience.
We're selling out instead of selling up.
We are actively losing the soul of Santa Cruz. Mainly the people of Santa Cruz. And there's a guy named Anthony that I met at the farmer's market. He's a community elder and a poet who's moving away to Arizona after living for decades in Santa Cruz, particularly because of the cost of housing. But mainly, he says, because it's the only place, get this, it's the only place where he has experienced this much racism other than living in Texas. And he's an elderly Mesoamerican gentleman. Or the story of Abby, right? The 8-year-old girl who lives in a van with her mom and her two siblings, and feel an 8-year-old who feels the need that she needs to use her talents to get a job to help support her mom to get rent because her dad got arrested. Unacceptable. 8-year-olds should not have to be thinking about this. We shouldn't be losing community elders and creative minds because they don't want to be here because they don't feel welcome. And then we have people like Curtis. Like, cool. People like Curtis. This man changes my life every time he drives by.
Speaking of Curtis Relaford, whose double long van, you may have seen it around town, it's two huge long trucks with peace and love type slogans written all over it, often playing music too loud for some. I heard one of my friends complain about the volume of his music, but he gathers I kind of like his stuff, but again, he isn't parked next to where I'm living, so you know, maybe I'd get tired of it after a while. But he often is downtown, or was, although he's recently fighting a number of citations. But he was present for this rally. In fact, he provided the platform that Drew spoke from, which is high on top of 7 feet up in the air, on top of along one of two vehicles connected to each other. You may have seen it if you're a Santa Cruzan.
Work at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and I'll hear reggae in the back of my head, and I'll stop, and I'll look out the window, and then Curtis will drive by, and it will make my day so much better every time. Now, people, like I said before, is dedicating his life to spreading peace, love, and compassion. But if you look inside his cab right here, he has enough, as many parking tickets, I can make a skirt out of them. It's crazy how many parking tickets. And you know what's ironic? Is that he's being charged with disturbing the peace. It reminds you, I mean, I don't know how much you study Dr. King, but that's the whole thing with Dr. King, is that he had this idea of what does peace mean. There's a difference between positive peace and negative peace. And in the words of Dr. King, it is our obligation to disobey unjust laws. And if Curtis spreading love and joy is against the law, I think that we should disobey that law.
Yeah. Mr. Glover, tear down that wall.
Tear down the fence. Tear down the fence.
Keep on drewing.
So, that was a bunch of problems, right? But
by the fence, he's talking about the wrought iron fence around Loudon Nelson Park, which he refers to earlier in the speech, in a part of the speech I haven't played.
But there are some reasons that I'm running for city council outside of those. Those are some of the main reasons. I want to see those changes happen. But it means a lot for me to see all of you out here today, because it means that you all care about some of these issues too, if not all of them, because we work together in the community. And yes, it's frustrating and mind-boggling and disheartening, and, you know, some.
I'm going to kind of skip the rest of this rhetoric because it doesn't interest me so much. Although, you know, I've not sat through the entire speech from end to end. And who knows, maybe this is Drew calling in. Let me find out. So I'm going to play actually a little more of the rhetoric of Drew Glover, because I want to comment on it. And also, you can judge for yourself what you think of it.
Outside of those are some of the main reasons. I want to see those changes happen. But it means a lot for me to see all of you out here today, because it means that you all care about some of these issues too, if not all of them, because we work together in the community. And yes, it's frustrating and mind-boggling and disheartening, and, you know, sometimes it just, like, I always say it makes me want to tear my non-existent hair out because I'm bald. But it's the perfect opportunity for us to start to change the narrative, right? The November election, we can have a city council that's not a reactionary body. This is funny. But actually the antithesis of reactionary, which of course, according to the thesaurus, is radical and progressive. Hey. We can have a city council that promotes public safety by taking steps of prevention, not always looking at enforcement as a solution. A city council that represents the voice of the people, that amplifies the voice of the unheard and acts as a bridge to resolve conflicts in the community instead of bringing people together around solutions instead of polarizing the different communities against.
Notice that there's nothing specific about police misconduct, access to police records, particular requirements that the records on tasering or chokeholds, stuff I've requested, fatal shootings be released. Nothing about ending racial discrimination in terms of specific actions that impact the police department and the local sheriff's department. That's kind of what I see missing here. And maybe I just, again, I haven't heard that much of the rhetoric or the proposals. And maybe if I go to his website, I'll find a lot of concrete specifics. But I understood, you know, years ago when Drew came to town, he was coming to town as a sort of a radical Oakland activist. And I often think of people who come from the Bay Area who are radical activists having a very specific platform. And instead, I have seen a lot of feel-good events with Drew and not much in terms of actual concrete activity or being a spokesperson for particular kinds of changes. Now, you heard him talk about the bathrooms and the fences. That's good. Of course, it was done, you know, at a locale where some of us have put in some energy organizing that issue, and that's not to take away from those who are amplifying our voices, and that's good. Anyway, I'll keep my ears open, and if anybody has any thoughts on this, if this were a call-in radio show, I'd invite you to call in, but if you want to call in to the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, on this issue, I'll pass it on during the next show, which is on Sunday in the morning. So do that, 423-4833. That's 423-4833. Just leave a message. And here's a quick poetic moment from local poet Bert Glick. You may know him. He is... I don't want to just say recycling, because I believe every time he does it, he adds new poems. But he has a collection of poems called I Used to Be Me, which I'm now the proud owner of, I don't know, was it 3, 4, or 5 copies of different editions that have come out over the years. Most recently, I got one about a week ago. Less, actually, but somewhere in that time. And here he is reading one of his poems, or I think he is reading one of his poems. He's not reciting, but he's reading.
Traveling bookseller and author and poet, Bert Glick. Hi, Bert.
Well, I feel self-conscious now.
You should.
Okay. I hate flowers. Such shameless show-offs in their infinite variety. Look at me. Look at me. Aren't I pretty? Give me a break already. And how they rub their egos in my nose, assaulting my olfactory, heaven knows, with sweet fragrances. Just to look at their fantasia of colors. Blending, suffusing, juxtaposing, makes me sick.
I like it.
The erotic come hither displays, attracting insects. Disgusting. Okay. Not to mention their nerve-wracking silences. Is that all you can say? Nothing? They impact my psyche, humiliating me with their primal beauty. A rose by any other name, my ass.
I like it.
So what do you think of that, Urs?
I thought that was delightful.
So are you going to buy his book?
How much is your book?
$10.
Oh, that's a deal.
You're sold already, Bert.
More, okay?
If you get tired of reading, I'll read for you.
You'll do what?
I think it's hers.
Try one hug.
There you go. Oops.
Sorry.
January 67. We thought it was a movement. My beautiful, if I may say so, shoulder-length auburn ringlets, Song of Solomon-like, back in the hate. The hate is love, so saith the bumper sticker, when 20,000 of us thronged Golden Gate Park for the first human being, a Woodstock rehearsal. The sky sunny and fair. Oh, it's a real feast.
You get hungry.
Yeah, please.
No, I'm all right. Good.
You're okay.
The sky sunny and fair. The Grateful Dead was there. Janis Joplin and Jefferson Airplane. Grace singing, Go Ask Alice About the Hookah Smoking Caterpillar. The music of our generation generated from our bellies amidst the horrors of the times. Racial water hosing, attack dogs unleashed, tear gas billy clubbing, napalm Vietnam. No wonder we said, don't trust anyone over 30. Allen Ginsberg beating bongos with poetic fervor. And dig it, Tim Leary, the guru of LSD, telling us to tune in, turn on, drop out. Here and there, a breast that was bare, and bodies wiggling, indifferent to the Cold War neuroses, a flavor of goodwill prevailed, a day in a dance of a new culture, and I and my hair were there.
Very nice.
Name of the poem?
What?
The name of the poem is
Say that again.
Your name, the name of the poem, the name.
January 67.
I remember. Thank you, Bert.
I really like that.
Oh,
very much.
Did you like the flowers one, too?
I did.
Yes.
You like that one better.
You like the flowers one better?
No, differently.
I see. Okay, so tell me your name again.
Ursula.
Ursula, that's a beautiful name.
Thank you.
And that was done amid the clatter of a Chinese restaurant, Yan Flower, in fact. So you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and we're in the middle of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. If you have reports on what's going on in the streets, if you have any comments on the show, you can give me a call, as mentioned earlier in the show, at 423-4833. I like the beginning and the end of Bert's last poem about his long hair. It's so full of what sounds like, I don't want to call it cliches, but familiar sort of labels or brands, Timothy Leary, Janis Joplin. I mean, the stuff that's now used to sell T-shirts and skateboards and I don't know what else. Actually, I don't know if they're selling those particular things, but you get my gist. I'm more concerned about what impacted people personally themselves and what they actually felt. But it actually strikes me better on a second hearing. So, thank you, Bert.
When the river of rebellion overflows, I'll be there. When the seed of discontent plants and grows, I'll be there. Watching for the sun through the dark and rainy storm. Searching for the keys to the dungeons old and worn. Let me tell you, I'll be there. When the shadow of the tyrant falls and sweeps across the land. And when men would steal from others with a paper in their hand. When people search for answers and the answers never come. When their troubles would be over if they thought and fought as one. Oh, let me tell you, I'll be there. The whispering of yesterday has grown into a roar. The wind of freedom's blowing out of every distant shore. Oh, when the time is ready and the call is loud and clear, let me tell you I'll be there. When the thunder of oppression roars and crackles, I'll be there. And when those who would be free are wearing shackles, I'll be there. For the day is gonna come when they'll throw away their chains, lift their heads and raise their arms for the struggle that remains. And let me tell you I'll be there. The whispering of yesterday has grown into a roar. The wind of freedom's blowing out of every distant shore. Oh, when the time is ready and the call is loud and clear, let me tell you I'll be there. When the thunder of oppression roars and crackles, I'll be there. And when those who would be free are wearing shackles, I'll be there. For the day is gonna come when they'll throw away their chains. Lift their heads and raise their arms for the struggle that remains. And let me tell you, so let me tell you, let me tell you, let me tell you I'll be there.
And that was from the after his death, this album was released, Phil Oakes. Name of the song, of course, I'll Be There. And here's an interesting editorial in today's San Francisco Chronicle. Safe injection sites are a needed tool, from the open forum part of the editorial page, by Talia Hart. What's interesting is she's the president and CEO of the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce. Now, usually the Chamber of Commerce is regarded as a sort of a reactionary or conservative group anyway, although I believe Mike Schmidt, who was a strong defender of the right of homeless people, vets, people to sleep without being harassed at night by police, even if they're outside, and he supported ending the sleeping ban law nearly 20 years ago. I think he was involved, and he was part of a, it was a CEO of, I was the director of the Chamber of Commerce, the CEO of our local Chamber of Commerce, simply a member of the Chamber of Commerce, but he was part of that. So it's surprising, though, to find this perhaps not that surprising, but to find this proposal about safe injection sites. And I'm going to read a bit about this, although it may be familiar to people who follow this issue. After careful consideration by the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce's Board of Directors and visits to both InSight in Vancouver, B.C., the first legal supervised site injection center in North America, a safe injection center in North America, and Health Right 360 in San Francisco, our board voted unanimously to support the use of safe injection sites in San Francisco. Our trip to InSight was eye-opening to members of our group who had reservations about opening such a facility in San Francisco, but the data speaks for itself. In the 1990s, amid an HIV epidemic among injection drug users, drug-related overdose deaths reached record levels in Vancouver. After intensive research, public education, and advocacy, InSight opened in 2003 in Vancouver's downtown East Side, where there is a high number of long-term injection drug users. Since then, InSight has never experienced an overdose death. In 2017, the site recorded 175,464 visits by 7,301 unique users. More than 30 peer-reviewed studies show that Vancouver's supervised injection and needle exchange programs decrease injections taking place on city streets and the number of needles discarded in public places. Take back Santa Cruz, take note. That the program reduces the incidence of overdose deaths and prevents the transmission of deadly diseases. Now, community leaders are working to bring safe injection sites to San Francisco. Earlier this year, the San Francisco Health Commission voted unanimously to support the opening of safe injection sites following the Safe Injection Services Task Force positive recommendation. Such sites are supported by Mayor London Breed, that's the new San Francisco mayor, and some of the legal hurdles will be overcome with the passage of AB 186, State Senator Scott Wiener's bill, or is it Wiener? I'm not sure. It was passed by the State Senate on Tuesday and would approve pilot programs in San Francisco. Our street environment is becoming more and more of an impediment to growing our businesses. This, of course, is the real reason. Attracting customers and retaining our workforce. We need to protect the health of San Francisco residents, employees, and visitors. While not a panacea, safe injection sites could be one of many tools to address the state of our streets. Something that our city council and indeed people running for city council, Drew Glover, take note, should be speaking about and championing as well, not just as a council candidate, but as a person willing to work on that issue independently. And I want to remind folks that needle exchange only began illegally. That's perhaps what needs to be done with safe injection sites. And the phone lines are busy today. My apologies for any distraction. So up next, let's tune in on the, well, kind of a regular feature, interviews from the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal Church at Cedar and Lincoln Streets from last Monday.
It's August 20th, about 6:10. Coming into the Red Church.
Talking with Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz Full-Timers.
And what do you got, Julie, in the next 25 seconds?
Front page of the San Jose Mercury News yesterday. It was the 19th of August. There's a woman reporter who lives in her van, and she wants to retire in her golden years, and she did a really great job representing the culture. And some people here at church were asking me about van life and considering that, so I wholeheartedly embrace it and suggest it. Everyone should definitely read the article if they can. It is available online.
Get a loan from Wells Fargo, perhaps?
Oh, you can get these vans like for $400 at the Salvation Army. It's called the Adult Rehabilitation Center Auto Auctions on Taylor, I think, on San Jose. They auction them off for $400.
Okay.
Yeah. Auto auctions.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. You can read about how to buy vehicles at auctions online for free. They talk about the different colors of smoke and what you want to avoid and what you want to look for. And I think anybody can honestly go and look at vehicles before the auction and get as much data as possible and probably still make educated decisions and be happy with their purchase.
And, of course, you are.
Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz Full-Timers.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
I won't ask. Take care. Any reports?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Dispatching really close people, and
the time of the end is pretty much near. That's what I will say.
How's life treating you outside, or are you outside?
I'm okay outside. I prefer to be outside. That's what God gave me to live in. So.
Any hassles from authorities?
Four or five times I've been stopped, and I think it's pretty much because of the warp thread. So, other than that,
tickets, any abuse, any event? A cup of coffee in the morning, perhaps?
No tickets, no abuse. Just maybe a little bit of harassment for my religion, for being able to smoking.
Really?
Yeah.
Anything in the last week?
Yeah, all of it in the last 10 days. I've been stopped over four times.
My Santa Cruz police deputies, Parks and Rec Rangers?
Four times Scotts Valley, one time sheriff.
What did they tell you? Why were they stopping
you? Walking through people, mountainside, walking on a mountainside.
Walking without a permit?
No, just no permits, no nothing, just grabbing water, just taking a little bit of water.
And that interested them, huh?
Yes, there was they said they got called. It seemed like impossible within like 30 seconds to response. It seemed like the response was like too ridiculous, you know. By the time I drank water, 3 minutes later, there was a cop, you know.
Well, water is a precious resource.
Yes, yes.
And we've been listening to the thoughts of...
Yeah.
What's your name? What do you want to say?
Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew. Should we say?
Not much. I'm feeling too well.
All right. Well,
you're killing me.
Did your health improve?
No, health not improved. But if you know any out there that wants to donate a small laptop, notepad, anything like that, because I want to write a book and a play about what it's like out here.
If anybody's interested in doing that kind of donation, give me a call, 423-4833. Thank you, Steve.
You're right.
Reports?
Yeah.
Rumbles? Complaints?
No.
Happy thoughts? Thank you.
It's going as well as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, man. Street reports of any kind? What have you been getting?
Well, I was parking and fixed my taillight, and then they gave me a ticket for $75 for broken taillight when I was parked.
When you were parked?
Yeah.
Even while you're trying to fix your taillight?
Yeah.
Did you ever get it fixed?
Not yet.
All right, we'll get to it.
I know, huh?
And we've been speaking to, what's your name?
Troy.
Thank you, Troy. Anything else? Thank you, man. Any reports?
Nothing here.
No, it looks pretty good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Smiles are for free.
For sure. But are you, you're smiling now, but you weren't when I walked up to you.
Just scratching my head.
No bad news happening? Well, it's good news, kind of. Thank you.
Very good news. 30th is when I go back.
Back to?
My court for the second one for getting arrested by the cops.
What are you charged with?
Trespassing with a first alarm, laying hands on me.
And have you been to court on this before? Have you been to court for...
Where you went to the first one, yeah.
What's the nature of this, pre-trial or...?
Yeah, I think so.
And what time and what court, do you know?
8:30, 1 o'clock.
Your last name, so people can find you on the court calendar if they want to check you out? If you wish to say.
No.
No problem. You take care of it. Okay. Let us know what happens if you want.
Yeah.
All right. Any street reports? Hi.
I'd like to thank Paul over at the Recovery Care Unit on Coral Street. I just had a hip replacement and had a place to stay after surgery.
Which How long did you get to stay for?
About a week and a half. Yeah.
And where are you staying now?
In the car.
Yeah. And have you been okay in the car?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Police saying, excuse me, sir, can I see some ID?
Lots of police saying, excuse me, can I see some ID?
They've been polite. Did you say you were a hip?
I have many times, yes, absolutely. Yeah. They kind of know me at this point is the deal, I think.
Anything you want to add?
No, that's it, yeah.
What's your name, if you wish to say?
Steve Shaver.
Thank you, Steve.
Absolutely.
All right. I think we went through this last time. Yeah. How is the housing?
Oh, I love it. Get your low housing. It's the only way you're going to make it in this town. Get on the low housing list.
Until they raise the rent again, even though it's low housing.
Well, they can't. I only pay $200 a month, and you know, you just got to get on the waiting list. You got nothing better to do than to get on a waiting list and just wait for that housing.
And we've been talking with
Joe.
Thanks, Joe. That's a real question which has come up at Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom HUF meetings, which is just how secure are people on Section 8 from rent raises? Either are they protected under the current city council ordinance that will end in November? Will they be protected under Measure M? What's the story? Because as you heard from the Feather Lady, that she's getting suddenly rents jacked up even after the city council voted for a rent freeze preventing rents going beyond 2%. So the question remains to be answered.
Street reports?
Not today, boss. But thank you. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Training, you know, to making this thing happen for us.
Once a week, yeah.
Once a week. Better than I appreciate it.
And once a month.
So. Yeah.
But not as good as once every 2 days.
Hey, for real, yeah, that's real. You know, and the man upstairs and everybody, you know, for having a kind heart, you know.
And we've been talking with?
Junior.
Thank you, Junior.
It's been a good day.
And we're listening to the good day thoughts of
Jeremiah.
Jeremiah. Thank you, Jeremiah. Oh, no, it's you again. What's your name again, sir?
Travis Wheeler.
I remember you, Travis. Anything?
A lot of people know me as Fish.
I'm not going to make a pun of any kind here. Anything happen that you want to pass on? Murders, sexual escapades, enjoyable things?
Enjoyable things, yes. There's been... I had a really good weekend. I was very happy with Food Not Bomb. They got some new tents and a couple new tables, and everything seems to be working out a lot smoother. And there's a lot more helpful volunteers. That
you being one of them.
Oh, of course.
Thank you. We've been talking with
Travis Wheeler.
Thanks, Travis. Anything you wish to pass on, sir?
Rabbi Bill Posner, everybody.
Yes.
Birthday.
Billy, tell me.
You should announce that.
I did.
Robert Nurse, everybody.
So I'll see you over at the rent control.
Peanut butter?
Yeah.
Hey, Posner. I'll see you over there.
The good rabbi.
You're throwing the good rabbi.
The good rabbi. Where's the bad rabbi? I'll see you over at the rent control thing.
Okay, Luis is going to come too.
All right.
So I got to go home and get Luis.
And that's us preparing to head for rent control land. The rent control forum was Monday right after the Red Church meal. And I think I may play a little bit of that for you now. It's probably gone online somewhere, but I'm not quite sure where yet. Also, there is a rent control forum coming up next Monday, either at 6:30 or 7 at the police department's community room. That's a room at the police department, which if you're approaching the police department's front door, it's directly to your right, in case you don't know where that is. Community, the police station is on Center Street, a block beyond the Loudon Nelson Center and its closed bathrooms. He's right around the street in front of some honky Pacific. And it's music time.
The wind was a torrent of darkness on the gusty tree. The moon was a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas, and the roll of the moonlight over the purple moor, and the highwayman came riding, 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 yes, the highwayman.
instrumentation kind of drowned out Phil Oakes' voice in that particular, that number, The Highwayman. I like the song, but I like to hear the words, too. So let's catch I'll Be There, another one from A Toast to Those Who Are Gone.
All around this country, trouble in the air. And I hear the voices calling me, asking, do you know and do you care? Do you know and do you care? So I'm gonna do what I have to do, say what I have to say. And I'm gonna be what I have to be. Now won't you come on along with me? Won't you come along with me? Don't wanna cause no sorrow. Don't wanna cause no pain. Oh, I'm only gonna cause what I have to cause. Until this land is free of shame. Till this land is free of shame. So I'm gonna do what I have to do, say what I have to say. And I'm gonna be what I have to be. Now won't you come on along with me? Won't you come along with me? Only one thing I know, I know we're not alone. Was a million here before we came. Be a million when we're gone, we're gone. Million when we're gone. So I'm gonna do what I have to do, say what I have to say. And I'm gonna be what I have to be. Now won't you come on along with me? Won't you come along with me? Oh, I'm afraid of trouble. Yes, I'm afraid of jail. But I'm more afraid, Lord, not to try. More afraid what happens now if we fail. What happens now if we fail? So I'm gonna do what I have to do, say what I have to say. And I'm gonna be what I have to be. Now won't you come on along with me? Won't you come along with me?
If I knew why the sun did shine, and if I knew the taste of ancient wine, if I knew all these wonders, there's one thing more I'd know. I'd know the way we all should go. And if I knew the deepest ocean floor, and if I knew the waves upon the shore, if I knew all these wonders, there's one thing more I'd know. I'd know the way we all should go. And if I knew the seasons and the wisdom of the years, I'd know the reason why we're here. And if I knew the power of the Lord, and where the gifts of heaven may be stored, yes, if I knew all these wonders, there's one thing more I'd know. I'd know the way we all should go. And if I knew the seasons and the wisdom of the years, I'd know the reason why we're here. And if I knew the power of the Lord, and where the gifts of heaven may be stored, yes, if I knew all these wonders, there's one thing more I'd know. I'd know the way we all should go.
That was Two by Phil Oakes. If I Knew, the last one, and the one before was I'll Be There. So a week or two ago, we passed through Hiroshima Day, August 6th, and Nagasaki Day, August 9th. Here's a clipping from the day before Hiroshima Day on the in the Mercury News. Prominent African-Americans opposed atomic bombings. Generally unknown, even to most A-bomb historians, is that a number of African-Americans in 1945 and 1946, who were then of prominence or future prominence, tended often to be critics of the August 1945 atomic bombings of Japanese cities. Such criticism was far more likely in 1945 and 46 among such black Americans, especially black writers, than among their liberal white counterparts in the United States. About three-quarters of those dissident African Americans were college-educated at a time when less than 1% of America's adult black population had attended college. Most of the African-American critics were Northerners, though the bulk of the nation's black population in 45-46 still lived in the American South. Among the significant African-American critics in 1945-46 of the atomic bombings were Bayard Rustin, a future top advisor to Reverend Martin Luther King, Horace Caton, a sociologist and frequent columnist in a leading black newspaper, The Pittsburgh Courier, Langston Hughes, a novelist and essayist and also a near-weekly columnist in a major black newspaper, The Chicago Defender, the Reverend Gordon Blaine Hancock, a prominent minister and syndicated columnist in African-American newspapers, including the Atlanta Daily World, and more. Even years afterward, Rustin painfully recalled in the 1950s his sense of despair and unhappiness when learning of the atomic bombings of Japan. He was a chief advisor to Martin Luther King. To him, those two bombings constituted massive deaths, seemed the capstone of carnage with brutality and savagery. Whereas Horace Caton, the sociologist, believed that there had been racial implications and was furious that white Americans did not share his outrage but actually welcomed the atomic bombings. And I recall my father, who was in the Second World War, also welcomed the atomic bombings, buying the mythology that it was needed to end the war and saved American and Japanese lives. Hughes, Langston Hughes, in his Defender column, obliquely asked why the $2 billion expanded on the A-bomb project could not instead have been used to help clean up slums in America, particularly African-American slums. In his syndicated column, Hancock, also a college educator, called America the super slaughterers of the world. His written indictment was so sharply phrased that it upset some African-American newspaper publishers in 1945. In August 1945, Powell cut short, these are some of the people who are black Americans who opposed this, his honeymoon to return to his important Harlem church, the Abyssinian Baptist Church, to lead a formal protest. On Sunday, August 12th, just days after the two bombings, a large Protestant congregation condemned in a formal resolution the atomic bombings. That statement declared that the bombing was a violation of morality and that bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki constituted the murder of innocent people. That's Adam Clayton Powell, who was a member of Congress. He was a member of the Democratic Party, implicitly criticizing President War Criminal Truman, as I like to think of him. The only member of Congress to openly oppose the atomic bombings was Adam Clayton Powell. So as you may gather, I'm no fan of the atomic bombing of nuclear weapons, and I'm concerned that this is not an issue for folks who are screaming about Russiagate. In fact, they wouldn't mind risking nuclear weapons, or nuclear war, I should say, with Russia in order to push their anti-Trump agenda. I mean, that sounds a little perhaps extreme to say, but there's a reason why the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists has pushed its clock up to 2 minutes to midnight, which is the dangers of nuclear war lowering. And unfortunately, all these calls and other time pressures have kind of eaten into my schedule here, so I'm going to kind of end the current version of this particular broadcast here and play for you something from a few years back around police abuse, which I hope you find interesting. And I'll be back on Sunday with, probably back on Sunday, with more of the same. I always like to qualify it because I want to leave myself an escape hatch if possible. But if you have stuff you want to report, I remind you, 423-HUFF is my number, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Thanks for listening. Call me if you'd like, and we'll talk about, well, updates you may have you want put on the air. So let's close out with an old Phil Oakes tune. Well, you may recognize it when you hear it. Here it is. In case you didn't, it's called When I'm Gone.
There's no place in this world where I'll belong when I'm gone, and I won't know the right from the wrong when I'm gone, and you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't feel the flowing of the time when I'm gone. All the pleasures of love will not be mine when I'm gone. My pen won't pour a lyric line when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't breathe the bracing air when I'm gone. And I can't even worry about my cares when I'm gone. Won't be asked to do my share when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be running from the rain when I'm gone. And I can't even suffer from the pain when I'm gone. Can't say who's to praise and who's to blame when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. Won't see the golden of the sun when I'm gone. And the evenings and the mornings will be one when I'm gone. Can't be singing louder than the guns while I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. All my days won't be dances of delight when I'm gone, and the sands will be shifting from my side when I'm gone. Can't add my name into the fight while I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be laughing at the lies when I'm gone, and I can't question how or when or why when I'm gone. Can't live proud enough to die when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. There's no place in this world where I'll belong when I'm gone, and I won't know the right from the wrong when I'm gone. And you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it. I guess I'll have to do it. Guess I'll have to do it while I'm here.
But actually, it's not. I mean, it shows where the power structure is. That's already been talked about a lot on mainstream media. And I'm going to be talking about it more on my show. I do a show on, as you probably know, from 6 to 8 tonight, and on Sunday.
Yeah.
That's called
Bathroom Spears Broadsides, right?
Well, it's not Bathroom Spears Broadsides. It's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
Well, we all just slur the words, you know.
The slurring of the name of my show.
Excuse me, I know.
All right, then.
There's lots of things that I have to do in the morning that's kind of hard to do.
No, I understand. No, it's a mistake
like
a lot of people make. It's not simply you. A lot of people think it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, but I'm not a spear guy. I've never used a spear. I probably never will. It's more about Robespierre and a bathrobe, so it's Bathrobespierre. But let's get back to the police department. They're my favorite topic, or at least topic of the moment.
Quite timely topic.
Yeah, I think so. In August, I think it was around the time of the Ferguson murder, as I perceive it, when Brown got shot down by Wilson.
Yeah.
I got interested again. I mean, I've been interested in this for a long time, in what the Santa Cruz Police Department's policies are regarding, let's say, use of batons, guns, tasers, pepper spray, chokeholds, all that stuff. What their guidelines are. More important, how many times and against whom and in what circumstances they've used these things in the last two or three years.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent them a Public Records Act request, and I got a lot of diddly-doo back and forth with Jackie Dreschler, who's the public records keeper, probably just under orders from Vogel or Steve Clark or whoever's, you know, press managing the whole thing, particularly in light of the Ferguson, oh dear, you know, they're exposing our underwear that we're, you know, this is all supposed to be kept out of public view, that, you know, police officers are unaccountable. It's fundamentally the bottom line. Well, the attempt to bring them to it, but they're supposed to be accountable at least in terms of public documents. And so I was able to, and I got this actually some time ago, a couple years ago, the police department's policy manual, Santa Cruz Police Department's policy manual, and it's posted on Free Radio's, on Free Radio, on Santa Cruz Indie Media. If you want to go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz or Santa Cruz Indie Media, just browse for it, Santa Cruz Independent Media. And then look up SCBD Policy Manual, or just look up Norse, my last name, because I posted under that. You'll find their very thick policy manual. And what's significant about the policy manual is it's really, I've been told, and I don't know actually how true this is, but I kind of have been repeating this as though it were true. If you see a police officer engaged in criminal behavior, it's less likely you'll get anything done to him by his superiors than if you find he's violated a police department policy. So what you really want to find is the policy that she or he is violating, rather than, you know, oh, he shot someone down in cold blood. Well, we can explain that, you know, and then they do, and away you go. You know, I'll give him administrative leave for a couple of weeks, and, you know, if necessary, you know, even if an independent investigator, as rarely happens, comes in, as they did in the case in 1999, 2000, of an officer who was twisting a woman and her as she was holding her baby in a protest in front of the McPherson Center way back in 1999. They actually got an independent investigator who found that the police officer used excessive force, which was the only time that our police review board ever found excessive force. And that it only found it because the independent investigator found it. And that was the only time they ever got an independent investigator in there, because there was massive protest and you had a new city council that was trying to prove it was a bunch of liberals until they crapped out. So it's rare to have, you know, a police officer actually held accountable. He wasn't really held accountable. He was simply, he left the force and he joined a nearby force. And I believe it was Pleasanton or Concord or some near city, Menlo Park. I don't know, because he stopped me later on the road to chat with me. So in other words, he certainly wasn't prosecuted for threatening a woman's life, and instead, Steve Argue went to jail for 9 months for punching the cop in order to free the woman from this cop's possibly fatal grip and the danger of her dropping her child and so forth. So when are the circumstances that police officers on our force, not in Ferguson, not in New York City, not in San Francisco, but here, are using dangerous, lethal holds and are held unaccountable, whether they are, and implements and equipment like pepper spray and so forth? Well, that's what I wanted to know. I mean, and maybe they're all justified. Maybe every single occasion it's used was needed to subdue a dangerous person. Well, I'm going to post the information I got online, and I encourage people to go to Santa Cruz Indy Media to look at it. But the short answer is they stonewalled, although they did give me the number of times that different things were done. They told me how many times a person was tasered in the last 2 years, how many times a person was, a gun was, I don't think they even, I'm not sure if they said when a gun was drawn, although that can be important. They're supposed to keep a record of all that stuff. But one of the issues that's being raised nationally is, police departments are not even required to report to the federal authorities or to any other authority when they kill someone. So we don't even know how many times the police nationally have killed people. I mean, locally you're likely to, because it generally makes the papers, even if it's only a small section on the back that said, he was a drug dealer, he was running away, he drew a weapon, all these things, which are customarily hauled out to justify any police shooting or use of excessive force. Although, you know, in some cases it may be true, but it's just the standard rap that they use across the country. So I wanted to find this out. So I'm still trying to find out more. We have a public safety committee of the Santa Cruz City Council, which is supposed to be overseeing this stuff, but it actually is simply empowering the police with more opportunities to do this kind of stuff. David Chirazes, the recently reelected city council member, heads this group. I think it's Pamela Comstock, Chirazes, and I think it's Cynthia Matthews, but I'm not sure. The composition of the public safety committee changes. And instead of going after, or at least monitoring, what our police department is doing on a regular basis, and this was the case even when Don Lane was on the committee, I believe, they are pushing forward legislation that criminalizes poor and homeless people. And that, you know, for example, one's coming up next Tuesday, the stay away order stuff. So, I've talked about that, and I'll be talking about that on my show. Essentially, give the police more opportunity to claim there's crime happening, so then they can launch into these other more extensive methods of force if the individual says, hey, get your fucking hands off me, you know, I'm not doing anything. Then you are, you know, really in trouble because you're not showing adequate respect for this illegitimately exercised authority. But the issue that we have that is really linked to the national concerns, and it's racial too. We've investigated, Huff has gone to the Santa Cruz Police Department to check out the record of Bradley Barnett, who is a sort of notorious police officer downtown, who has been particularly harassing of a couple of street vendors like Kate Wenzel, the scarf lady. Not so much recently. She reports things have gotten better. But we wanted to look at his record and see if he's got some penchant for some kind of racial bias in what he does. And when we looked over all his citations, we found that he cited black people, not so much Hispanic people, but black people, at a rate of 7 times their frequency in the county population. Now, to be honest and to be fair, it's possible that, you know, they're more criminal than everybody else, because we know all black people are criminals, right? That's otherwise, why would there be so many in jail? Obviously, that's a bunch of bullshit, but that's, you know, that's one possible way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is, well, maybe there's a bunch of people downtown in that area who happen to be African American, and therefore Officer Barnett is, you know, citing them more frequently. I don't know, but we need to have the racial stats for the entire police department on what they're doing. And I recently asked for those stats on Officer Azua, who has been videotaped ticketing an African-American guy down near Taco Bell for smoking when he wasn't smoking, and at least according to the accounts of people who were there, and then letting an employee, a white female employee, walk by with a cigarette in her mouth. So, I mean, you have all kinds of not just palpable disparities in how the police are treating different racial types of people in Santa Cruz, at least in some circumstances, but you have it being pointedly ignored when it's brought to the attention of Chief Vogel. It was in a letter from John Colby about 2 or 3 months ago. So we have a problem in Santa Cruz, and the point is here, how do we address it? When's the best time to do it? How can we address it? There was, of course, a big march to the police station 2 weeks ago or so when the bogus verdict came out that, you know, exonerated the murderer, Darren Wilson, who killed Michael Brown, you know, in Ferguson. But the first thing we need to do is clarify what our demands are, and then we also have to start escalating or continuing the kind of protests that the brave people of Ferguson have been doing for months at a much greater risk to their liberty and life than any of us face here in lily-white Santa Cruz. So that's really my interest, is to see some policies changed. And the first thing we need to show is that the policies are being hidden. And the second thing we need to show is what the policies are. And that's the other thing I wanted to mention, the original reason I called in. Tell me if I'm going on too long.
Well, what would you like us to let you know about if we find out more incidences of this? Or do you think that these public records requests are going anywhere?
Somewhere. They just don't go to the distance they need to go. But even their partial journey is helpful because you can see that the police department is not revealing information that really they're supposed to be revealing, or that why should they be concealing it? You know, I mean, that's the issue. But equally important and interesting to me when I looked it up today, because I did get their policy 300. Which, you know, you can find. It's in the police policy manual. I mentioned before, find an officer guilty of murder, he goes free. Or, you know, if you kill somebody, there's no indictment. The prosecutor works too closely with the police and isn't interested. Doesn't want to jeopardize his connections, you know. Just like some political activists, you know, don't want to jeopardize their connections with older members of the ACLU or members of established liberal organizations who've done nothing for years about these issues but like to pretend and fundraise on the basis that they have. So it's a persistent problem. It's a problem of corruption and co-option that happens. But if you, of course, violate a police department policy and you can show that, that may annoy the higher-ups in the police department, because police officers are supposed to, if they violate policies, we certainly don't want that to come out in a visible way, because that way we seem to be violating our own internal policies, and that violates the military discipline of the police department, right?
Of course.
So what is the policy regarding the use of lethal force? Well, 25 years ago, attorney Ray Glock Grunike, and he was an attorney at that time, spoke, I believe it was to the Board of Supervisors or to the Santa Cruz City Council, denouncing the use of pain compliance holds, the chokehold that killed Eric Garner in New York City, by the Santa Cruz Police Department against peaceful UCSC activists who were supporting the rights of homeless people to sleep by doing a sleep-in at the town clock in the early months of 1989. And the officer who did this was a guy called St. Ange, who is no longer with us. I think he had a drunk driving accident and, you know, he retired from the force some years after. He was a portly, angry officer who, you know, was one of many in the police department. But it's not, the point is not to criminalize him particularly, though certainly to hold him accountable for what he did. But these issues have been raised for decades in Santa Cruz, and they probably will need to be raised for decades more until they're addressed. But the policy is this. Here's the policy on, at least on chokeholds. I'm reading it, 300.2.4 from the policy manual. You'll be able to find this online. I'm posting a story about it, and I'm posting this section of the use of force, the policy manual. It says, pain compliance techniques may be very effective in controlling a passive or actively resisting individual. I want you to understand now, New York City has banned this tactic. Santa Cruz has not.
We have to clarify that that's the case. This is what killed Eric Garner on the sidewalk this last summer. Officers may only apply these pain compliance techniques for which the officer has received departmentally approved training and only when the officer reasonably believes that the use of such a technique appears necessary to further a legitimate law enforcement purpose. I'll read that again.
Okay.
And I'll summarize it. Well, first of all, again, the actual wording is, officers may only apply these pain compliance techniques for which the officer has received departmentally approved training, you know, been to class for 7 hours or whatever the hours they require, and only when the officer reasonably believes that the use of such a technique appears necessary to further a legitimate law enforcement purpose. Notice the specific words. The word reasonably is in there, which is supposed to protect you, so he can't just believe it and it's a whim he has, but it has to be a reasonable belief. But it has to be a belief that it appears necessary. Not it is necessary, but it appears necessary to further a legitimate law enforcement purpose. Let's say arresting a guy who's selling loose cigarettes on the streets of the city, or possibly sitting on the ground but says, I have a right to sit here and I'm not getting up. You can use a chokehold under those circumstances because that's a legitimate law enforcement purpose. He's violating the law. She's not moving her butt when she's told to do so. That's a legitimate law enforcement purpose, or at least he can reasonably believe it. So it's a complete blank check for the use of pain compliance holds, the kind of murderous holds that are banned in New York City and that killed Eric Garner. We have that pain compliance technique 300.2.4. It also says officers utilizing any pain compliance technique should consider the totality of the circumstance, including but not limited to, notice, including but not limited to, you can add anything else you want to, potential for injury to the officer or others if the technique is not used. Notice, the risk of potential risk of serious injury to the individual being controlled, and of course that's the reason these techniques are banned in New York City. The degree to which pain compliance technique may be controlled in application according to the level of resistance, the nature of the offense involved, the level of resistance of the individual involved, the need for prompt resolution of the situation, if time permits, e.g. passive demonstrators, other reasonable alternatives. The application of any pain compliance technique shall be discontinued once the officer determines that compliance has been achieved. And then it gives you a description on how to use carotid restraint. And I'm going to have to clarify that I'm reading, it looks like, the wrong section. Pain compliance is when you start twisting someone's hand behind their back. What actually happened with Eric Garner, and I'd like to apologize for misleading you, but it's still here, is carotid restraint is what was used on Eric Garner. That's the chokehold. Pain compliance is a little different. I just read about pain compliance. The carotid restraint hold by a trained officer may be effective. It should only be applied under the following conditions. One, you got to receive departmentally approved training. Two, it can only be used when you reasonably believe that such a hold appears necessary to prevent serious injury or death to an officer or other persons. So here it is not just any useful law enforcement purpose. You can torture someone for a useful law enforcement purpose with a pain compliance hold, but you can only start strangling them if there is it appears necessary and you have a reasonable belief that it's necessary to prevent serious injury or death to an officer or other person. And then you're also supposed to bring over a medical person if it happens. You're supposed to tell the person who's you're giving the guy to or the gal to that they've gotten a pain compliance hold, and notify your supervisor, and then document it in related reports. So I apologize for suggesting that the Eric Garner situation is equivalent on the pain compliance hold. It states that you can use it to prevent serious injury or death to an officer or other persons. But I'm not, I think that that probably, and I have not looked at the New York City stuff, that is not, I would suspect, at least what the media tells us, New York City has simply banned the hold, period. And it was clearly obvious that in New York City that pain compliance hold was not required. I'm sorry, the carotid artery, the choke hold, was not required to take down, or at least to protect the officer or others nearby from serious injury. That, at least based on the video that has been widely shown on the media. I hope I haven't been too confusing in any of this.
Have you read the Washington Post? Have you read that about the county cop that got fired immediately after he brutally choked a student in Knoxville, Tennessee?
No. Did that happen after this? When did that happen?
Why does it say April 28th? Oh, that's ridiculous. Okay, well, I just got this. Anyway, I just read this. It was posted on Facebook, but it looks like it says April 28th.
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Okay, so it says that a deputy Brandon Gilliam wrote that Dotson began to physically resist officers' instructions to place his hands behind his back and at one point grabbed on to an officer's leg.
Ooh.
And so there's a whole video on this and shows it going. And he was charged with public intoxication. This was the arrestee. And resisting arrest. He was released from jail on $500 bond. And then it said that the sheriff, Jimmy J.J. Jones, in my 34 years of law enforcement experience, excessive force has never been tolerated. After an investigation by the Office of Professional Standards, I believe excessive force was used in this incident. The investigation will now be turned over to the Knox County Attorney General's Office to determine any further action.
Yeah, well, we don't know actually what happened after that, I guess. And again, we're talking Tennessee, and I'm really trying to talk Santa Cruz.
It's just kind of interesting. Maybe all this stuff's coming up to the forefront because of the bullshit.
Well, although that sounds like an earlier story. I mean, what we need is, you know, there. This whole section, which I'm going to be posting, tells supposedly the circumstances under which our police force can use, shoot a person, beat a person with a baton, spray a person, and so forth. But the issue is, how many times have they done it? Under what circumstances?